We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. It is the final day in the books, day three for the 2021 NFL draft. I'm Lindsey Patterson, Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
Well, I got a pizza staring me in the face right now that I have not eaten yet. Charlie, I hear, is stuffing his face with a taco, and I need an adult beverage as well after 3 days of the draft. I think I'm going with Hennessy, but we'll see. We're going to talk about adult beverages. That's going to be my question of the week. So I'm filling you guys in. So you better answer at the end of the podcast.
With my tacos, I came into it with an NFL mindset, NFL draft mindset. I really did this. I got a high upside taco, which was the brisket. I got a position of need taco, which was the chicken. And then I got like a change of pace taco. It had this interesting name and it was like a mix of chicken and beef. And it looked very good. So my taco selections were strongly impacted by what Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor did today.
And now I'm starving and I'm soon getting before this podcast is probably over. Okay, let's get to the Cincinnati Bengals picks right now. I'm actually going to start with the fourth round. We talked about this yesterday. They do the trade back. They get their guy, Jackson Carmen, on the offensive line. And then today they add to the offensive line. They get two back-to-back picks for the defensive line. I like the picks. I know a lot of people question a little bit Deonte Smith. He's going to be a guy who's going to deliver flexibility. You look even at Cam Sample, defense, a Carl Lawson comparison I actually saw with him today over on the social media. What did you guys think about the fourth round for the Cincinnati Bengals?
Well, they drafted interior guys and edge rushers. And Cam Sample, I really like that. As I said in the video, if you watched online, he won defensive MVP at the Senior Bowl. He really raised his stock down there in Mobile. I think he can be a player that can contribute right away in Cincinnati. Tyler Shelvin, he's a pretty good player. I don't just like him because we share the same name, but he did flash during LSU's national title run. He did have some weight issues during his time in college, but if he can stay motivated and get some coaching, he's kind of raw a little bit. If he can get some coaching and they can plug him in at the defensive interior, a position that was thin in Cincinnati last year with all the injuries and everything. So that fourth round, and then Deonte Smith as well. He was a really productive offensive lineman at East Carolina. So I think he's a smart player. He's a player that can play both guard and tackle. The Bengals view him as a tackle right now, but he does provide some position versatility. And we all know the Bengals like offensive linemen who can play multiple positions. So that fourth round, they really did attack positions of need. So I do like what the Bengals did in that fourth round. They got those extra picks in a trade on Friday. I mean, excuse me. Yeah, it was Friday. Look, I've got my days mixed up. It's so late. So they got those picks in a trade with the New England Patriots, and they used them wisely. So good job by the Bengals in round four. And pretty much the whole day, day three in the draft, I think the Bengals, they went into the draft with a philosophy and an intention. They were motivated to draft and beef up areas of need. And those areas of need were up front on both sides of the ball, offensive line and defensive line. And they certainly did that in a draft, and they weren't subtle about it at all. They really attacked it.
When you talk about the fourth round, though, I think the two most important names to mention are players the Bengals didn't select. It's the players the Bengals passed up when they went from 38 to the middle of the second round, specifically Tevin Jenkins and Liam Eichenberg. Now, it's very possible the Bengals had Jackson Carmen higher than either of them on that draft board. But regardless of, I guess, how it wound up shaking out with who the Bengals got, they took the approach of using that fourth pick and swinging for upside. Aside from getting multiple shots at it, multiple chances, when Zach Taylor discussed the theme of the fourth, he said they took three guys with incredible upside. Cam Sample's a guy who has like this disruptive presence and this elusiveness that really translated into a high level of competition at the Senior Bowl. He's a guy who Zach Taylor said, opposing offensive lineman, said he was so tough to face. And based off the scouting I've done of him, he is a high upside guy. Then you have Deonte Smith, who Deonte Smith in his 35-inch arms is how we'll refer to him on this podcast from now on. He's interesting. That acquisition, I think, will be a better player, but it reminds me some of Fred Johnson, someone who the Bengals, remember with Fred, claimed off waivers and said he has every trait you could want from an offensive lineman, physically, and now it's investing in player development and growth in those areas. Deonte Smith is exactly in that mold, possessing every trait. I really like the agility and the feet he showed and the quickness he had in the Senior Bowl. He's someone who they're not expecting to start right away. Obviously, they have their tackles, but if he hits, that then becomes like a second round type player again, if he hits. And then with Tyler Shelvin too, he was someone who probably expected to go much higher than this when he opted out heading into the season. He's someone who, the word that comes up is, you know, massive disruptive presence on LSU's defensive line. He's a run stopper, continuation of Bengals, looking for upside against the run, which they really value. And he is a jump off the tape guy, and the coaches noted that as well. So, you know, if one or two of those hits out as second round caliber players, then this trade makes a lot of sense for the Bengals.
Yeah, I think 2 or 3 years down the road, we'll look back at the 2021 fourth round for the Cincinnati Bengals to see if it panned out with some of those guys on the offense or defensive line. And then you move forward to the fifth round pick. This surprised a lot of people. And Zach Taylor told us after the draft that, look, they didn't think that Evan McPherson would be there. So they went ahead and got him in the fifth round. They needed a kicker. He's 11 for 11 on field goals under 40. He made all 52 of his extra points last season. I know a lot of people criticize this a little too early, but you look at some of the games last season and around the NFL, there's some bad kickers out there. I actually liked this pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. I think it would have been better in the sixth round, but who knows if he would have been on the board for them. What were your thoughts on the kicker?
Yeah, it's interesting you said that. Darren Simmons said during after post-draft press conference that usually draft a kicker one round ahead of their projection. I thought that was a really interesting statement. I have to admit, they did surprise me by drafting a kicker in the fifth round. I didn't think that they needed to draft a kicker right there in that spot, but in their opinion, he was the best kicker in college football last season. Darren Simmons said he's going to come in right away and they expect him to be a starter. So that bodes well. I mean, that does not bode well for any kicker on the Bengals roster right now. So, and that might be a position that, you know, Austin Seibert, he might be looking for a job pretty soon. So I do think McPherson is going to be a starter, like Darren Simmons said, and Austin, he might be looking for a job soon. It is surprising, though. I did not expect the Bengals to draft kicker. And based on the reaction of social media and the videos and everything, I don't think the NFL world expected a kicker to be drafted in the fifth round.
Zach Taylor said as much. The biggest reason this pick made sense for them with five is because they had already built that depth and taken chances at that upside with the three players they picked in the fourth. You know, in a lot of ways, McPherson was like their seventh pick, maybe a seventh round pick, but he was their seventh pick in the draft. And if the Bengals took a kicker in the seventh, you know, I don't think anyone would be, you know, that's when you take your kicker in your fantasy draft as well in the final round. I did learn a lot about drafting kickers today, about going around early than maybe you think you do need to expect. Darren Simmons said the teams that he saw at that pro day, the teams he thought would be interested in McPherson, had multiple picks, some of them, before the Bengals would come around again in the sixth. It was a long wait. And again, while, especially because the Bengals had already addressed those other areas, you know, I always do respect when a team goes for its guy in an aggressive way, whether that's a running back or a kicker or any position. If a team believes that strongly in someone, I'm willing to see how the investment works out before evaluating it.
I definitely got some Jake Elliott vibes when they drafted him in the fifth round. So I know Bengals Twittered it too. I don't think they're going to mess this up. McPherson will be the kicker on day one. The sixth and seventh round, you look back at the offensive line, and then they even add a running back who some feel is a steal in Chris Evans and could be a Geo replacement. Look, I felt like the Cincinnati Bengals felt pretty good about the running back room, why they let Geo go, and then they found production. I know there's not a whole lot of tape when you look at Chris Evans. Zach Taylor said, you know, he probably wouldn't have been on their radar if he wouldn't have been at the Senior Bowl. He had the academic suspension when he was at Michigan, but they feel like he can add to the running back room. Trey Hill, depth, he can play center, guard. Obviously, the center position is a question mark right now because they got Billy Price in there. I know he's getting reps with Joe Burrow at Paul Brown Stadium over the last week or two. Trey Hopkins to be determined when he's going to come back, if he is ready for training camp in week one. So another flexibility position with Trey Hill. And then their final pick, Wyatt Hubert, who adds to the defensive line another piece and of depth who can be a future development on the defensive line. What were you, what did you guys think of the sixth and seventh round?
Well, these are players that you really don't know how much they are going to contribute or even make the team when you draft a player that late. But I do get drafting another offensive lineman because the Bengals prioritized up front, beef up up front. That's what Zach Taylor said in this very podcast. That's what they wanted to do this offseason. They focused in on it in the draft. So they got a guy like Trey Hill who can play center and guard. Again, this is the prototype of what offensive linemen the Bengals like. They like offensive linemen who can play multiple positions. Then Wyatt Hubert. Okay, he's a pretty good player. I was surprised that they would pick him in the seventh round, but all those seventh round, sixth round players, they're flyers. You never really know what you're going to get. You just hope that they can come in and compete. They make the team great. If they contribute, that is a huge plus. With Chris Evans, he jumped out at the team at the Senior Bowl. They really liked what they saw from him. He was winning one-on-one battles. He did not play a lot in college. As you just said, Lindsay, he had an academic suspension, but he said he learned from, you know, the adversity that he faced, and that was a learning experience for him. So you like players that, you know, went through trials and tribulations in life and then bounced back from it. He's one of those players. And we all are some of those people. We all go through trouble. So he did that. He bounced back, and now he has realizes a dream. He has the opportunity to be NFL player and make an NFL roster. So I was really happy with what he said during his press conference. And, you know, he is a player that can be a running back who can spell, you know, Joe Mixon or Samaje Perine on third downs and come in and catch passes if he makes the team, of course. And then don't forget that he can be a special teams guy too, can return kicks, can return punts. So he does have an opportunity to make the team on special teams and be a reserve running back. We all know Joe Mixon get the lion's share of carries, but Chris Evans can be a player that can contribute. So that was a pretty good pickup for the Bengals.
Real quick, in a lot of cases with these sixth and seventh round picks, you do expect them to have a very good shot to make the team. Look at last year, for example, Akeem Adeniji was an important swing tackle who played an important role when called upon. Behind him, Marcus Bailey in certain games as well was used in specific more pass coverages. And again, there were moments last season where the Bengals needed Marcus Bailey. I think that because the Bengals had so many picks already, you can kind of view these sixth and seventh round guys as, you know, guys who are competing versus some players who were starters last season. Looking at the depth chart, you know, Wyatt Hubert is going to go in and compete against maybe Imani Bledsoe and maybe Khalid Kareem's in that mix as well for that last edge rusher spot. On the offensive line, maybe Trey Hill is competing with a Michael Jordan or Hakeem Adeniji for that last offensive line spot. You're not counting on these guys to be your depth. They're almost the depth to the depth. And if they pan out, you know, that's an added bonus. That's the best part of having that many picks. Chris Evans, I think he's going to do things this year. What stood out to me with Bengals coaches said is, you know, they saw him winning one-on-one matchups against really good linebackers at the Senior Bowl. His ability to catch passes makes him different. He really is a change of pace guy, bringing a skill set the Bengals didn't have after releasing Giovanni Bernard. So there is a role for him. There is a role for him immediately.
If you were looking at the AFC North right now and looking at last season, offensive line, defensive line, obviously the Cincinnati Bengals finally fixed needs in the trenches. We've talked about it for over a year now. And even looking at the roster at some points last season, who was coming off the bench to play on the defensive line, who they had to plug in on the offensive line. Where would you put this overall class right now? Again, we don't know because some of these guys are going to develop. I hate draft grades because we don't know for about 3 to 4 more years what these guys are going to pan out to be. Obviously, you want some of these rookies to start day one, come in, make a huge impact. But if you're the Cincinnati Bengals and it is about 7 p.m. on draft night, the last day, how are you looking at these picks right now?
Man, this is probably one of the toughest draft classes to judge. And this is for every single team and probably NFL history, because we never had a draft class that just went through a pandemic. And still in a pandemic, you had players who opted out of the season, players that maybe played a couple games, players that didn't play at all, got hurt. So I got COVID. So this is a very tough draft class to cover for all 32 teams and to judge. But if I am going to judge everything that I've seen from these players, whether that be 2020 or 2019, I would say that last year's class was better. And that's one, because I saw every single player on the Bengals 2020 class play on the field. And, you know, they all contributed, even in a small way. Now, I can't say that I believe, even though this class is bigger by three players, I cannot say that I believe that every player in this draft class will step foot on the field for the Cincinnati Bengals in 2021. So for that alone, I could say this class is not better than 2020. Now, will they have some impactful players? Of course. Jamar, headlined by Jamar Chase, I think that's obvious. He's going to start right away. Jackson Carmen might start. We don't know. But I don't – if right now he's not penciled in as a starter. I know that for sure. He has the ability to be a starter, but right now he's not. So the only surefire starters right now for sure rookie season are Jamar Chase and Evan McPherson. Now, down the road, this class can develop and turn into really good contributors and starters. But right, I don't see more than five starters from this year's class. They can prove me wrong, but the best players that I see from all these picks, I'll say, are Jamar Chase, of course, Jackson Carmen, Cam Sample, Evan McPherson, just because he's going to start and have a huge role. And man, it's a toss up between Chris Evans and Tyler Shelvin. Those would be my five most impactful players in this class, based on what I've seen on tape and based on how I envision their role. I know I'm providing a huge hot take for you guys and for everybody to pick apart.
But those
are the five.
I'm ready.
I'm curious what you don't like about Joseph Asai.
That's what I was going to say.
You literally named everybody and then skipped him.
I have him right here. I'm like, come on.
I'm not calling out. I do like him. I think he's a little bit of a tweener. So I want to see how he adjusts in the NFL level. Now, I think he can be a contributor too. And again, the players I did not name, I'm not calling them out. So I don't want to feel like I'm calling them out. This guy does not have any chance of making it. But he's a little bit of a tweener to me. So I want to see if he can play at a high level and contribute and create pressure off the edge on a consistent basis. Because in college, there were times where he was an outside linebacker, and then there were times where he had his hand in the dirt and was, you know, a pure defensive end. So I want to see how he transitions to the pro game before I make a real accurate judgment on him. I've seen Cam Sample contribute at a high level at both the Senior Bowl and in college.
I think what you have to keep in mind is that, like, if the Bengals get four starters from this class, that's a generational class almost, and that's why you
trade. No way. Just because you have four starters doesn't make you I said maybe down the road. I didn't say in year one, maybe down the road. I think generational class is a little bit strong if you get four starters from the draft class.
Last year's Bengals class, I think, has three starters, and they picked at the top of the round in each round. And Logan Wilson, someone who the Bengals next season could go out and add a linebacker, and he might not even be a starter anymore. You know what I mean? There's a very high miss rate on draft picks. That's why it's so much of a you know, it's very much of a gamble every time you make a pick. And if you can get four starters out of a draft class, you will take that 100% of the time. And with this draft class compared to last year, I do think, you know, a signed sample come in as their third and fourth edge rushers. That's a lot more than, say, Akeem Davis-Gaither was doing last season. They'll have offensive linemen who contribute more than, say, Hakeem Adeniji was doing last season as their fourth swing tackle. You have guys that will do more right now and have probably more upside than their late round picks last season just because they have more of them.
I'm going to get hammered for this, and I think I like this draft class more because they had more positions and they added depth and they used all their picks. And another reason, they have a new offensive line and defensive line coach. So I think that's a huge difference with some of these picks. They will get to develop and work with them. I also think when you look at the offensive line right now, and look, this might be we might look back on this week one or we get into training camp and in the guard position. I still put Quentin Spain out there right now, but I put Jackson Carman out there. And then that is credit to Frank Pollock at the moment. To be determined, because they have yet to work together on the field. But after just talking to Willie Anderson and just reading more about what Jackson Carman can do, obviously it's going to be an adjustment going from tackle to guard, but getting to work with him, mini camps, training camp, to be determined on what the first 2 weeks in the NFL season look like for him. But I'd say you'd want him to be guard this season. I don't think that you're going to have Xavier Suafilo out there.
Whoa, what's up with
you? I think one of the poorest players, I mean, even though he was injured last year, I think obviously we've talked about this numerous times. The guard position is their weakest link on their offensive line.
So it's Quinn Spain and Jackson Carman, the two starting guards for Cincinnati Bengals week one.
Like I said, I might get hammered for saying that, but I think at the very moment right now, look, they could bring in other bodies during training camp, undrafted guys who can come in and compete, because that's what they're going to be able to do now is have guys compete on their offensive line. They really couldn't do that a whole lot last season. I think at the moment, and I like when the season starts, we might look back on this and say, what were you thinking when it comes to the experience that he's had at guard? Not a whole lot. So you put him out there in his first NFL season. So maybe, yeah. I don't think Xavier's the answer.
Okay.
My overall reaction is, and I shared some of the numbers yesterday, over the last 16 drafts, the average NFL team has picked one offensive guard in the first two rounds. So when you draft an offensive guard in the first two rounds, that is a massive investment for that position. And it does seem like the Bengals are committed to right now having Jackson Carman be a guard. I just haven't seen enough of him in general, and obviously I haven't seen him play guard yet to make a prediction. That's what OTAs are for. Hopefully we'll be able to watch some of that and obviously training camp, but that will be the defining position battle of camp to watch, Spain versus Suafilo versus Carman.
Lindsay just doesn't like Xavier Suafilo. She doesn't like players from Texas. No, I'm just joking. I'm totally joking.
No, it has nothing to do with that. And I know Xavier was injured last year. I just think their guard position obviously has to be an upgrade right now.
I have another question of the week for you guys too. You guys are going to love it, but keep on going.
No, I'm done with the offensive line. That's how I feel. And someone's going to roll this tape and they're going to remind me if he's not ready for week one. But right now I think Carmen's going to start at guard. That's just my hot take if you guys
want. And then Quinn Spain's going to start at the other guard spot.
Yeah. And he's not the long-term answer either, but okay. He's more comfortable at left guard. So you put him out there. I think the biggest concern right now on the offensive line, if Carmen works out, obviously is the center position, because you got Trey coming back from this injury. Billy Price, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if that's going to be the answer.
Trey Hopkins is going to start.
All right. Take your word for it. You said it right here on the podcast. And Trey Hopkins with that really quick rebound and rehab, getting back from that ACL injury, will be ready for week one of the 2021 season.
I mean, I didn't say that, but he's going to be ready. I mean, he's recovering He's ahead of schedule. I will say that. He and Joe Burrow. Here's my Joe Burrow update, because everybody loves Joe Burrow updates. We saw him throw on video. He and Joe Burrow are both ahead of schedule, per sources.
Just breaking some news in this last day of the NFL draft podcast. Let's go ahead and get to it. What are the questions?
Okay, I'm going to put you guys on the spot. Grade the Bengals offensive line right now. The players you project to be, and not as a whole. I'm not saying as a whole unit. So, Lindsay, you think Jackson Carmen and Quinn Spain are the two starting guards. So that means you also have Trey Hopkins at center. You have Riley Reiff at right tackle. You have Jonah Williams at left tackle.
Yes.
Charlie, I don't know who you believe your starting guards are. Okay. So I want you guys to grade the Bengals' projected starting offensive line right now.
So I will say this. As of today, that's my offensive line. Could that change? Could we see OTAs, mini camp, training camp gets here, and they have some other guys in there, and we see competition, and that changes my mind 100%. Again, it's May 1st. It's May 1st. We're 4 months away from the regular
season. Lindsay, what's your grade?
Just trying to battle here. No, my grade right now, C plus. Maybe B minus. Okay. Maybe B minus.
Okay. Charlie?
Yeah, I think that they have two solid middle of the pack tackles in Jonah Williams and Riley Reiff. So at the tackle position, I give the Bengals a B. At center with Trey Hopkins, I think he's a B tackle as well. But coming back from injury, I think you have to make an adjustment for that. So at center, I'll give them.
Your entire offensive line has.
I'm going to get there.
Okay.
Because you weigh them all equally. At center, I'm going to round it down to a C plus. But it's very close depending on the curve. You know, you college students understand. It's a very close C plus B minus. And then at offensive guard, I do think that. Here's where it gets interesting. So I would grade their guards as C right now, but I think that they have made B-level investments in their guards. So the upside of Jackson Carmen, the statement they have made by taking a second-round guard could be the most aggressive move on the entire offensive line because it's so rare that teams do that. But for now, just with – I guess just overall with what we saw last season from the players they have coming back – you know, it's probably like a C plus B minus group right now. So factoring in those three individual grades to create a GPA kind of thing, it's probably a B minus C plus right there for the entire offensive line.
A B minus C plus.
It's like okay. An A. That would be the grade, a low B minus right next to a C plus.
Okay. Now grade the Bengals projected starting wide receiver unit.
A minus.
A minus.
I give it a straight A, but the concern I have is with 4, 5, and 6. So.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty easy group to grade for me right now.
Okay. So, okay. Now, hold on. So, if the Bengals did not draft Ja'Marr Chase and they had Auden Tate as their third receiver, grade the starting Bengals wide receivers.
But here's the thing, though. If they don't draft Ja'Marr Chase, then it's possible they're more aggressive signing a wide receiver in free agency. And we could be talking about Sammy Watkins being a Bengal right now. So it's just too hard day.
I can't believe you guys cannot answer this. I asked a basic question.
That wouldn't be the answer. Auden Tate is not the answer. And I'm here to say that I know how fans have felt about him for years. And this guy's the red zone guy. And he can be a fourth down red zone guy for the offense if he can stay healthy. But no, he's not the answer for your third. He wasn't the answer for the third receiver. And the Bengals weren't going to just rely on Auden Tate being the third receiver. That was not going to happen.
So you both are dodging the question.
No, okay. I answered it. That was not going to happen.
No, I said a grade.
To grade the wide receiver room with Auden Tate. Yeah. Auden Tate.
Yes.
Mike Thomas, T. Higgins, Tyler.
No, just the starters. The Bengals run 3 wide receiver offense.
I would say C minus, C plus, C plus. I mean, I don't like it.
It just wouldn't have happened.
No,
they would have picked Dyami Brown in the second round, so it wouldn't have been a conversation.
They would have gotten another receiver because what they showed during free agency of not getting one.
Okay.
They would.
Okay.
They would have.
So now, I'm just gonna say, Lindsay, you said C minus a Bengals wide receiver room. Without Ja'Marr Chase. Now I'm gonna ask you another hypothetical question.
I don't like this.
Picture. Grade the Bengals offensive line room with Penei Sewell.
I would say a B plus.
That's a straight B for me. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably B plus actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
87.
Okay.
There's well, nothing. There's nothing against Penei Sewell. There's absolutely nothing. The guy's going to be a great, everyone hopes a great offensive lineman in the NFL. But when all that stuff was coming out that he's comparison to Anthony Munoz, nobody knows with any of these rookies that they're penciling them in for Hall of Famers. These guys have yet to play it down. That's to be determined on what he can do. Yeah, he would have been a great addition to the Bengals offensive line. I still don't have a problem with what they were able to do because of day three of the NFL draft, day two of the NFL draft. They get Ja'Marr Chase out there. And what does the team do with the rest of the draft? They address their needs, offensive line, defensive line. They get a late running back. I have no problem with the needs that they address because not all teams do that. I know it sounds silly. And even if I tweet it out, it sounds silly when I say it, the Bengals address their needs. It doesn't happen like that for all NFL teams and even for former Bengals teams. And they finally did that.
Okay. Well, that concludes my questions of the week, unless you guys have some for me.
Man, that was, I don't like any hypothetical. No more. You're not allowed to ask it. It was never going to happen. Auden Tate is not the answer as a third receiver, and he's not the third receiver. And this is nothing against Auden Tate. If he can stay healthy, he can contribute. Obviously, it's nice to have another receiver out there. You got Ja'Marr Chase. You got T. Higgins. You got Tyler Boyd, and you address other positions in the draft. So
Lindsay wants to see Auden Tate and Xavier Suofilo sit on the bench for all 2020.
Never said that. But I don't know. I just think the Bengals, they addressed all their needs. And they showed that what we had talked about prior to the draft, if you're going to go wide receiver, you better stack up on those offensive linemen. And they did in the draft, the second and third day. So they did.
Their offensive line is still a C.
I mean, it's to be determined. It's May 1st. I told you, it's May 1st. It's better than it was last year. And now they have depth and competition, and they're able to have a different offensive line coach in there who I think is going to make a difference when you have, even on the defensive line side, that is going to make a difference in coaching. I think that matters. I feel like I'm yelling at the podcast, and I don't like
it. No, I'm just, you know.
All right.
I'm just going to wait until around week 10, week 11, and I'm going to bring this conversation up again.
It's fine. Anything can happen. But no, I honestly, overall, I think the Bengals, they hit their needs in the 2021 NFL draft. And I know you guys have plenty on Cincinnati.com. You can hear from all of the picks, Zach Taylor, Brian Callahan, Darren Simmons. Make sure you go check it out. What else is up there?
Well, I'm going to have draft grades. I know, Lindsay, you hate draft grades, but I'm going to grade the entire Bengals 2021 class. I will not provide a grade right now because that will ruin my story. And I also will have a feature on Jackson Carmen coming up later in the week. So keep it locked on Cincinnati.com for those two stories.
Same thing here. The best part of the draft is learning about players you weren't as familiar with and figuring out what they can add to a roster, you know. So same thing here.
Make sure you check it out. And also, I had to talk to someone who's very close, Cody Worsham, over at LSU. He worked with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase during the championship season, and he talked about their relationship and what Ja'Marr Chase is going to bring to the Bengals offense on and off the field. Make sure you check it out on the Bengals Beat podcast. So the Cincinnati Bengals are reuniting Joe Burrow with his former weapon, Ja'Marr Chase, at LSU. So I had to talk to someone who's actually close to Ja'Marr and Joe and remembers that championship season over at LSU. Cody Worsham, how you doing?
Doing great. It's a great day to be a Tiger and a Bengal. It was awesome to see Ja'Marr go to Cincinnati, link back up with Joe. We all had our fingers crossed that would happen, and to see it come true was really exciting for us down here, and I'm sure for Cincinnati fans as well.
When you think about that championship season, and honestly, with him sitting out last season, opting out of the 2020 season for Ja'Marr Chase, is it crazy to think about Joe, Ja'Marr reunited on the same team in the NFL?
Yeah, it is. I remember talking to Ja'Marr after Joe got drafted, and, you know, this was probably last spring, and kind of throwing it out there, like, what would you think about getting back together with Joe? He's like, I'd obviously love to, but just the chances of that are so slim. And, you know, I'm not going to get my hopes on that. I'd just be excited to play in the NFL. And for it to happen the way that it did is pretty incredible. I know there was, and you would know better than me because I'm not a big draft guy, and I don't follow the Bengals as closely as I should, although this year I'll be following very closely. I know there was talk about a needed offensive line and you know, is it better to protect a quarterback with an elite tackle or to get him some help in the receiving game to help the passing game? But from our perspective, it was just, we've seen what Joe and Jamar can do, and we know the chemistry they have, and it's a unique chemistry. It started really in the 2018 season. Everyone overlooks that season because it was Jamar's sort of he was slowly integrated into the passing game that year, but he blew up in the Fiesta Bowl. But that chemistry was being built all the way back then, and they got really close, and they have a very similar perspective on working out and training and their approach to improving, that they almost clicked instantly in that regard. Cause they're both workout addicts. They threw thousands and thousands of passes together and in their time at LSU, even before they exploded in that 2019 season. So they instantly clicked cause they have a similar work ethic and a similar approach to the game. And it worked at LSU, and I know it's going to work at the next level too.
We had a chance to talk to Jamar after the pick last night, and I'll tell you right now, 10 to 15 minutes with the guy, and he has confidence. He reminds me a little bit of Chad Johnson, former Bengals wide receiver. What does he bring on and off the field to an offense?
Yeah, a lot of confidence. Not a huge personality, not a huge, you know, flashy guy. He kind of just puts his head down and works. Just a great young man, always respectful, responsible, on time, communicative, but not a guy that wants the spotlight, wants to say, hey, look at me, I'm the best. You know, compare him to a guy like Justin Jefferson, who's very flashy and who's dancing all the time after he scores and always plays with a big smile, but it's talking a lot. And Jamar plays with a smile, but it's kind of a quieter confidence. And that's how he's always been. That said, there is a joy to the way that he plays and a joy to the way that he works. He just loves the game and loves to perform. And again, to contrast it to Joe has a real swagger to him, that y'all have seen now. A swagger to him, but he'll get up in your face and he'll talk a little bit, and he has that chip on his shoulder. I don't think Jamar necessarily has a chip on his shoulder. I think he just loves hard work and loves competition and loves being challenged. And I think it makes him smile. I think it brings him joy to embrace that competition. I think he's the last guy you would ever expect to be nervous or to have trouble, you know, adjusting to the limelight. I think none of it phases him. He's unflappable. And I think that's what sets him apart from so many guys. He's just steady as can be, consistent as can be. No moment is too big for him. And then you add that personality to the physical skills he has, and that's why you have the best receiver in the draft.
I think it's really easy if you want to go back to the championship season with Jamar, Joe Burrow, but do you have a memory that stands out with the two playing together?
Yeah, I mean, I have a few. You know, I put out a picture on the day of the draft yesterday, Thursday morning, of Jamar and Joe, and it was after the college football award show in Atlanta last year. That was before the playoffs. And that night I had dinner with Jamar and his family, and y'all will get to know Jamar's dad, Jimmy. Jimmy's a great guy. Jimmy is much more outspoken than Jamar. He loves his son in a way that any son would love to have a father love them. And he was just after the award show talking to Jamar about, hey man, your future's bright. And like, look at all the guys who have won the Biletnikoff. It's all these guys who went, you know, in the top 10, and they're all pro guys, and you have a chance to be that. And Jamar was just kind of like, dad, like, just ready for Oklahoma. I just want to get out there and practice. And it wasn't performative. You see guys say that all the time. He genuinely meant it. And so after that he had just talked to Joe right before that dinner, and they had the same conversation. They posed for a couple of pictures for people, and then they were like, all right, man, like, let's get back to work. We got work to do. They enjoyed their time in the spotlight, getting all the attention of the award show. But as soon as it was done, they were like, all right, that's enough. We're ready to get back to work and go. And that's what they're going to be like at Cincinnati. You know, Jamar will enjoy, you know, all the media attention he's getting and all the excitement from Bengals fans. But the second he can get to work, he and Joe are going to be back to work. I wouldn't be surprised if they're already throwing passes right now. Like, it just wouldn't shock me because that's the way they are.
When you last saw them play together, and as I mentioned before, Jamar Chase opting out of the 2020 season, are you surprised to see him go number five and be the best wide receiver in this class?
Not really. You know, he, like I said, he's hooked on football. He's hooked on the work. And when I talked to him before the draft, he missed it this year. He really did miss it. He had to make a decision that I think you'll never see athletes have to make that kind of decision again, just based on COVID and the uncertainty at the time. He wanted to play last season. He wanted to have one more season in purple and gold. He wanted to compete. I think he just knew that in the long term, the risk of playing in a season where at the time when he made the decision, there were so many uncertainties, far outweighed for him the reward of what he has now, a top five pick. And so it doesn't surprise me because he's not the kind of guy that would opt out and then just sit on the couch for a few months. I think the day he opted out, he probably woke up the next morning and was like, man, not going to practice is weird. Not being in the weight room is weird. I need to get going now. And so he was always going to work. He was always going to grind. For him to get the 40 time to where he got it under 4.4 solidified him as a top five pick, because that was maybe the only, I wouldn't even say question on him, but you can see on film the physicality. You can see on film the dominance at the point of attack. You can see on film the polished route running. The only thing you can't tell on film is, okay, does he have top end elite speed? You knew he was fast, but did he have world-class elite speed? And then he goes and runs a 4.38. And because he's been grinding for 6 months. So no, it doesn't surprise me. In fact, I think it's what I expected because he had a longer buildup to the draft than so many other guys who have come before him, who basically finished their seasons in January. And it's like, all right, I got 3 months to get ready for this process. Jamar had time. He evaluated his decisions. The work was never going to be an issue for him. It'll never be an issue for him. He's going to work as hard as anybody in the league from day one. And so it was just a matter of time until he got what he deserved, which was to be a top five pick and find himself in a situation like Cincinnati where I think he's going to thrive.
I can't let you go without asking about QB1. Obviously, his rookie season ended far too early. A lot of conversation that he could have been rookie of the year for the Cincinnati Bengals and in the NFL. What did you think of Burrow's first part of his rookie season?
I thought it was great. You know, it was obviously terrible to see him get hurt, but I thought – everything we saw before that was right on brand for Joe. I have a feeling that Joe getting hurt, that not getting rookie of the year. He's a guy that takes every slight and internalizes it and uses it as fuel for his fire. He's not going to dwell on it. He's not going to think about it every day, but it's just going to keep him going and keep him motivated in a completely internal way to where he's going to wake up every day with that chip on his shoulder. So a lot of people look at his season and say, great job. I did awesome this year. Pat myself on the back. The future is bright for me. I think Joe looks back at the season and probably looks at the win-loss record and looks at the other players who were rewarded ahead of him. Not to say that they didn't deserve the accolades that they got, but I think he'll take that entire outlook on the big picture perspective and say it's time to get to work and it's time to win a championship, because Joe is the most competitive, focused human being I've ever been around in any aspect of life. And I've been around a lot of first round draft picks in football, basketball, baseball, and none of them hold a candle to what Joe does from a competitive standpoint and from a focus standpoint. So he won't be distracted by anything. He'll be completely dedicated to the process. Having Jamar around will give him even more inspiration, motivation, because those guys push each other. They they push each other in a way that a lot of quarterback receivers don't. Jamar will look at something Joe did and say, man, that was special. I need to do something special too. And Joe will do the same for Jamar. So I'm excited. You know, I need to order some Bengals gear. I need to add it to my wardrobe because I'm going to be I'm not a huge NFL fan. I obviously watch. We have the Saints down here, and I do want the Saints to do well and cheer for them when they're on. But I think I'm going to be a massive Bengals fan this year. So if you have any leads on where I can get some good gear, let me know because I'm interested.
I will work on that. I'll put the word out on social media, and that gear will be coming your way with a lot of Louisiana fans, I'm sure, are jumping on the Cincinnati wagon right now.
Sure.
Two of the best from the team on the same NFL team. I can't thank you enough, Cody Worsham. Over at LSU, someone who's obviously worked closely with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Lindsay. Always a pleasure.